You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Rick Cushman. California and the country will probably have to wait months for the U.S. Supreme Court's rulings on Prop 8 and on the 1996 federal law that prohibits federal benefits from going to married gay couples. But the tenor of the questioning during arguments last week gave us some clues about not just what direction the court might go, but also on how wide the scope of its ruling might be. McGeorge School of Law professor Larry Levine was in the courtroom for those arguments, and he's with us today to give some perspective on the pending rulings. Professor Levine, welcome to Insight.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So I think we need to start with a disclaimer that this is all supposition, obviously. But from your sense of the questions, do you have a basic read? Is there something that you can sort of say, this is what we think we're going to go?
I think you're right that it's supposition. I attended an oral argument in the case that struck down the sodomy laws. And I got to say that I left that courtroom absolutely uncertain what the court was going to do. And nor did I have any guess that Justice Kennedy would wind up writing the most far-reaching gay rights decision ever. So with that in mind, we really don't know. But a lot of people like me are jumping into this. And so I will give my thoughts. Clearly, the court is not looking to make anything terribly bold, to take any big and bold steps.
And what was it that you saw? Was it were the questions very narrow? Was that why? Or there were some comments about how do we keep it going? Was that what it is that you saw for that?
Clearly, that's exactly the case, that there was no enthusiasm by maybe any of the justices to adopt the position that was taken by the lawyer for those who oppose Prop 8, that every state in the country should provide access to gays and lesbians to the institution of marriage.
But there was also some tone. I mean, it's like SportsCenter, where we're doing analysis and saying, and what we saw right there where they ran the fast break, and it appears that there seems to be a majority for supporting the same-sex marriage side on both of those cases. Is that correct?
Probably. And that's a big probably.
Right.
There seems to be a sense that if you cobble together those who might want to rule on narrow grounds. So Justice Kennedy, for example, on the Proposition 8 case said, maybe we shouldn't have heard this case at all. And my reaction to that is, well, probably you shouldn't have. I mean, it was a very narrowly written California-centric opinion.
Right.
The easiest thing would have been for the court just not to hear it. It takes four justices to agree to hear the case. So it may be that the five others, now having the chance to chime in, may say, you know, the best thing to do is just leave the lower court ruling alone, which would mean that Prop 8 would be struck down.
Right. Well, and you bring up Justice Kennedy. You know, I mean, he has been, I mean, every commentator in the country has basically said he's the key vote. You've written about him. You've taught with him. Is that a fair assumption, do you think?
I think it is absolutely accurate. He doesn't enjoy necessarily that role, or at least he says he doesn't. But you can tell that the lawyers are speaking to him for a large part of the argument.
Really interesting. So were they almost like aiming at him, looking at him as they were talking?
Somewhat. They don't want to be too blatant,
right?
And they have to be respectful to the other justices as well.
Right.
But it was very clear as things unfolded that yet once again, there's four on one side and pretty clearly four on the other side. And so, as goes Justice Kennedy, we'll go to the court.
And when the arguments are going on, how does Justice Kennedy deal with that? I mean, does he ask more questions, fewer questions? Does he sort of wait his turn so he's not so obviously the man?
They all share. I think it helps matters that Justice Thomas chooses to be quiet because
there's only eight of them. Right?
Because they're very active. Right. And I think it would be fair to say all the justices had things to say. One thing about Justice Kennedy is he does have a background as a law professor, as well as a judge and as a lawyer. And you can tell that. So sometimes he asks questions, as a law professor would ask a question. It doesn't really indicate his position. It is to probe and to challenge the lawyers. And that's why we don't want to read too much into his questions.
Right. Now, is there anything or any sense of whether these will be ruled on in essence together, because they took them both, which may have been separate decisions, but because they took them together, that there will be some sort of connection in the rulings?
They are connected in some ways. And even in the oral arguments, both days, there was reference to the other case. So I would expect the rulings would come the same day. There's no guarantee of that. And it's likely to be at the very end of the term, mid to late June, because they love to save the really juicy cases to the very end.
Right.
And they know that these are really juicy cases.
Right. And how does, I want to go back to the standing issue. We've talked about that on here before, but speaking of sort of making that ruling, Justice Roberts is going to assign it.
If he's in the majority.
If he's in the majority, right, of course. Of course. So could you talk a little bit about how the case does get assigned, to who writes it? And because I think we're all sort of assuming that Justice Kennedy might be the person writing it, and I don't know if that's an accurate assumption. Could you talk a little bit about how that happens?
Sure. In fact, last Friday was the day that they met and to try to decide how to resolve the case and who would write the opinions, and I frankly would have given a body part to have been in that room.
Yeah,
can't imagine, because it is so clear that the court is so divided, the justices are so divided, and there's so many different ways and approaches that they can take that I have no idea how that went. So they're going to do some sort of straw poll, right? Some vote, and that will define who assigns the opinion. And so if the Chief Justice is in the majority, and he very well might not be here, but if he's in the majority, then he would assign the opinion, and he might well assign it to himself. If he's not, then the senior justice on the other side assigns the opinion, and I wouldn't be. We all assume Justice Kennedy would be the author because he's authored the two other main cases. But the other justices might say, "Hey, I want a piece of this action."
I need to go sideways for just a second on that notion of them debating both the case and then the assignment of the case. Is it crazy when they do that? And does from what you know, does Justice Thomas actually talk at that point?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I certainly know he has to vote and say what side he's on. And he even chatted a little bit during the oral argument. He just doesn't talk to the lawyers. He talked to Justice Breyer, who was seated next to him. He does speak. He just doesn't interact with the lawyers during oral argument. So they all will participate, and they all might be quite active in this conversation. How it comes out, how they even decide what approach to take, is going to be fascinating because there's so many possibilities. But whatever it will be, it'll be pretty narrow.
Right. I'm talking with Larry Levine. He's a professor at the McGeorge School of Law and was in the courtroom last week as the Supreme Court heard arguments about rulings on same-sex marriage. I want to get back to this notion of standing because it's the least dramatic and it could be one of the most important pieces of this. There was a lot of discussion about whether the people bringing these cases, and particularly the DOMA case which was Congress or the Republican side of Congress, had standing to bring that. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. And you're absolutely accurate. Before the lawyers, even in the Prop 8 case, could get a sentence out, they wanted to go in a different direction. And the justices said, hold on, we want to talk about standing. We want you to talk about standing. So they kept bringing it back to standing. And it might be a couple justices who might find that the proponents of Prop 8 really don't have standing to bring the case. The justices were so concerned about standing in the Defense of Marriage Act case that they hired a law professor to argue separately at some length about why it is that these representatives of Congress, a handful of Congress members, don't have standing. And so they're obviously very, very concerned about it. The problem is, it seems very peculiar to me that they could dodge the issue of whether legally married same-sex couples have the right to federal benefits. I mean, you got to decide that.
Right.
And so by dodging it, it seems that they're kind of shirking their responsibility, frankly.
You know, we've also talked in here before when we were talking about the states that sometimes courts take cases. Now, obviously, they're almost required to take a case like this because it's a federal ruling and federal law. But that sometimes they take cases so that they can handle the procedural part of the case. Do you think that's a situation here?
There's a mystery about why they took the Proposition 8 case. That still bewilders me. I know those who are proponents of marriage equality very much hope they wouldn't.
Right.
And
right.
Basically, you know, very nothing good can probably come of it. The best thing that could happen will be back to where we started. Yet people will be, for a long period of time, deprived the right to marry as this all plays its way through the courts.
Right.
The DOMA case, I do think we all expected that they would take it because it's talking about striking down and limiting an act of Congress, and it has these broad repercussions for these married couples in other states.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And last thing, there's a range of potential directions the court could go, obviously, but are there other cases lined up? Are there other decisions that are awaiting what they might do with this?
Absolutely, because one of the issues is whether there should be what's called a heightened scrutiny. How much of a showing does a state or the federal government have to make if they're treating gay and lesbians differently than heterosexuals? So that would have a broad-reaching effect. I think they're going to not reach that issue because I don't think they're going to be able to get consensus. So that very well might affect other cases in the future.
Right. We have more information and links to all our previous stories on our website at capradio.org/insight. Professor Levine, thanks for the information. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, surviving in the comedy business. It's nothing to laugh about, and you wouldn't do it for long making puns like that. We'll be right back.